You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, September 26th, 2017.
I think they serve as a reminder of Indiana's past and how we move forward and progress to ensure that, you know, the things that happened here in the 20s don't ever happen again.
A mural in Woodburn Hall at Indiana University depicting the KKK burning a cross is the subject of an online petition and racial controversy. WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas speaks with the starter of the petition, Jacqueline Berry, as well as IU anthropologist Stefan Gilder, about the legacy left by the mural. That's coming up later in the program in today's Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, hands-on skills for caregivers. Coming up on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines. A fake poster replaced IU's sexual assault awareness posters in dorms and halls across the IU Bloomington campus yesterday. Designed to mimic the sexual assault awareness and consent educational posters it replaced, the poster mocked sexual assault awareness procedures and widely derided feminism. In its definition of consent, the poster said, quote, "Consent is a generic buzzword that we use to shove our own personal brand of feminism down your throat," unquote. It continued calling victims of sexual assault who report the incidents as, quote, "attention whores." Indiana University issued a statement last night warning that the poster was an alleged phishing scam designed to infuriate people into going into the website at the bottom of the poster, where the computers would be infested with malware and viruses. Middleway House, a domestic violence shelter in Bloomington, posted on its Facebook account, quote, "Issues surrounding sexual assault and consent are not laughing matters. We know that sexual assault is already one of the most underreported crimes, and that research supports that false reports are extraordinarily low. The rate of false reports of sexual assault is, in fact, consistent with all other crimes," unquote. The Indiana University Police Department is reportedly investigating the incident.
The Indiana University Caving Club is under review. The Office of Student Conduct is undergoing an investigation into the club after a student was locked in a cave for 3 days after a club expedition. 19-year-old Lucas Kavar was allegedly left in Sullivan Cave, roughly 20 miles south of Bloomington, without food, water, or cell phone reception after he reportedly became separated from his group. It was allegedly only after one of Kavar's friends called wondering about his whereabouts that the student instructors of the excursion noticed he was missing days later. Sullivan Cave is gated to keep inexperienced cavers from getting lost in its passages. Kavar, after finding his way back to the entrance of the cave, found himself locked inside. Kavar reportedly spent from Sunday until late Tuesday yelling at cars passing by on the nearby State Road 54 to no avail. The Herald Time reports that Kavar's parents alerted IUPD about their son's disappearance and that, 2 hours later, instructors from the caving expedition came to pick him up. Kavar, who reportedly lapped moisture off the cave walls in order to stay hydrated, had asked to be taken home. He is a graduate of Bloomington High School South, and his parents both work in the IU Linguistics Department. Kavar's story was featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the British Broadcasting Corporation.
In a summary judgment, an Indiana Supreme Court struck down a controversial series of abortion regulations late last week. House enrolled Act 33-7 placed several restrictions on abortion proceedings within the state. House Enrolled Act 1337 required women considering an abortion to view imaging of their fetus and to listen to its heartbeat within 18 hours of receiving an abortion. It also required for hospitals to dispose of or cremate the fetal remains and prohibited the abortion of a fetus due to sex, race, color, national origin, or the possibility of disability. Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, with the assistance of the Indiana chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, issued an injunction against the act in April of last year. House Enrolled Act 1337 was co-sponsored by Republican Representative of District 60, Peggy Mayfield. District 60 follows Highways 67 and 37 from Monrovia, wraps around Bloomington's eastern side, and ends at Lake Monroe.
The Ellettsville Town Council gave its final approval yesterday to the town's 2018 budget, but not without some controversy. Council member Brian Mobley says he feels administrators have unfairly cherry-picked a select number of employees to get raises next year. Mobley was the lone no vote on the town budget.
I just want to make some things clear for the public and for the employees of Ellettsville that only a certain number is going to be getting a raise, and it's kind of weird that I've never seen this done before. But the planner is going to get a $3,630 raise, which makes it $55,640. The administrative assistant for the planner gets a $2,187 raise, makes her up to $23,000. For the police, the part-time budget line is going to be $50,000. The administrative assistant will get a $3,988, brings her up to $34,762.
Mobley says he had figured out a way to give all the town's employees a raise, but he, quote, was denied. Mobley did not give details on how he would have funded raises for all Ellettsville town employees.
But it's a shame that when I talk to the fire chief, that there's times that he has to shut down Station 8 because he doesn't have enough people. And we turn around and hire police officers like it's going out of style. And if you go back 10 years and look where all the money went, it goes to the police department, not to the fire, okay? And like I've told people before, that's hard for me to swallow being a police officer, but fair is fair. And the fire department is a stepchild in this, and it happened again because he's getting denied a full-time firefighter. He can't fill his shifts at times. So you tell me if that's correct or not, that we're giving people raises that we can't fulfill our fire stations where we have to shut them down. We never shut down a police station, do we?
Council member Kevin Ferrest asked for a response from Fire Chief Mike Cornum.
Do you feel like this council treats you as a stepchild?
No, I do not. You only have so much money. You guys have a hard job. All right, so you know, the reasons what Mr. Mobley's talking about, they're there, you know, but as far as that comment, I don't know. You guys have a hard enough job to do to deal with, you know, $1.2 million of general fund money. You did a pretty good job at it, but you only have so much to go around, so.
Council President Scott Oldham, who is Bloomington police officer, also responded to Mobley's remarks, differentiating between the number of part-time hours funded and the hiring of actual police officers.
Some of those comments were a little bit disingenuous. This budget adds zero police officers to this. Zero. The part-time lines are what they are. Whether it's two people drawing off the part-time line or 20 people drawing off the part-time line, the part-time budget does not increase one iota. None. Where we were at with the increases that did come about were split off the LOIT, but it's not extra people, it's just extra hours that are being funded for both police and fire in part-time. There's nothing beyond that, it's extra hours, it's not people. So to say that we're hiring police officers right and left, that may or may not be true, but they're part-time and they can't work more than the allocated hours that are set aside in the budget. So in that regard, I understand the feelings where it looks like there's more, but there's not, folks. It's a simple matter of hours.
Oldham said he wished more money was available to fundraise for town employees.
This year, the basic budgeting was left down to the supervisors to tell us who needed to get what to make them competitive in the wage brackets that they're in. And a lot of these folks are hovering dangerously close to the poverty line, if not below it. So we've tried to make some improvements to keep some employees that are long-term employees that we want to keep, who give us service well beyond what they're being paid. Everybody in Ellettsville gives service well beyond what they're being paid. I wish the town was big enough with a big enough tax base to adequately compensate everybody. It's just not there. Hopefully one day it grows to that. But I just want to make it apparent that the council is not slighting the fire department or slighting any one individual employee with this budget. Hard decisions had to be made for the financial sovereignty of the town into the future. And that's what was done with this. Next year, they'll be reevaluated.
The council went on to approve hiring a new part-time police officer. Police Chief Ellettsville Town Manager and School Board Member Jimmy Durnall said the new hire will replace a recently hired part-time officer who is now leaving for full-time employee with another agency. Mobley was the only council member to vote against the hire. For WFHB, I'm Erin Wagermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
A series of murals at Indiana University is facing increasing criticism in the renewed push to wipe out statues and commemorations of racism and slavery in the U.S. In a panel of the Thomas Benton murals at IU's Woodburn Hall, a series of hooded Ku Klux Klan members lift their arms around a burning cross. One of the members is carrying the American flag. The mural has sparked debate for over 70 years. As WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas reports, the mural is facing pressure in the form of an online petition.
For 70 years, there has been controversy surrounding the Benton mural in Woodburn Hall at Indiana University. The mural is supposed to depict the rise and fall of American history, and they were painted by Thomas M. Benton. However, on one panel, there is an image of the Ku Klux Klan burning a cross outside. This image has stirred up different opinions. Right now, there's a discussion regarding whether or not the university should take the murals down. Anthropologist Stefan Gilder believes that these murals should be kept in place.
No, I do not believe it should be taken down. I know a little bit about the murals and the artist's intent, and I think with a little research and conversation, I think it can help really open up discussion, and I think they serve as a reminder of Indiana's past and how we move forward and progress to ensure that, you know, the things that happened here in the 20s don't ever happen again. For me, you know, when I look at those murals, it's like, wow, you know, this actually happened. And granted, you know, the KKK is still around. That helps me, though, think, though, you know, they still exist. But, you know, we as a state, as a country, you know, on this campus are not going to allow them to rise up again and to try and oppress anyone at all. So this is what, I mean, that's why I think it's important that we look at, you know, look at those murals and that we have these discussions and conversations about Indiana's history.
Gilder believes eliminating the mural is, in essence, whitewashing America's history.
I think it's something rare because it shows, you know, this state's history in its true self instead of glorifying it or keeping that part of Indiana's history out. Because to me, that would just simply be whitewashing Indiana's history, just by trying to cover up, you know, the tragic and terrible things that have happened and painting something that's like, oh, look how glory, you know, wonderful and glorified Indiana is. It's such a great state when Indiana was not always such a great state. And in certain cases today, still remains not so great of a state, just like our country. There are great things about it, but there are also not so great things about it. And, you know, that needs to be told and understood.
Although the historical value is of importance to some, others feel that historical value does not outweigh the impact the mural has on students. This is true of Jacqueline Berry, who started a petition on change.org that is meant to remove the mural. Berry is located in Florida at this time. So what inspired her to try to make a change all the way in Bloomington?
So I was on Facebook one day and I was reading a thread of comments. Someone had briefly mentioned the KKK mural in Woodburn and how it always made them uncomfortable having to look at that while they were in that room. So I privately messaged him and I'd asked if there was anything that, you know, he had tried to do or tried to talk to the university. And, you know, then he gave me this whole explanation that, you know, in the past things had, people had tried to get it removed or taken down, but had failed every time, and that the university was sticking with the preservation of history over, you know, what the concerns of, what he felt were the concerns of some of the minority faculty and staff and students at the university. So I sat on it for a while, and I decided to try to do more research on it. And, you know, I saw all of the times that people had tried to bring it to some university board to try to get it removed. And each time, you know, it had failed. So I decided to look into the diversity policy of the university and decided that I really believe that the mural violates that policy. So I decided I would start the petition.
The diversity policy she's referring to is the diversity statement provided by the university. It does state, and I quote, "We must include all who comprise our diverse university community and foster a campus climate in which those diverse influences are respected and valued," end quote. According to Barry, the university has not been abiding by this.
I think that having a representation, even if it's a historical preservation piece of the KKK, violates that policy. I mean, you wouldn't go into Germany, into a university in Germany, and see swastikas painted on the wall as a remembrance of Germany, you know, a remembrance of a time in Germany where Nazis were there and now they're not. It's absurd to think that the university's stance on that is, you know, well, we need to preserve this so that Indiana doesn't forget where it came from. Well, the people that have experienced that kind of hate and that, you know, that is part of their history or their family's history, that's not something they're ever going to forget, and they don't need that reminder. And the university issued a policy stating that it was aware that it can make some students uncomfortable and that it can be upsetting.
This is definitely not the end of Barry's efforts. She plans to take more action in the near future.
In the upcoming weeks, I am working on organizing some students, and, you know, we'll move into the next phase of the ultimate goal of getting the mural taken down. That's still kind of in the works right now, so I can't divulge too many details at this point in time, but I've had students reaching out to me on Facebook Messenger, which I hope that that continues, and if, you know, any students or faculty feel like they want to get involved, they are more than welcome to reach out to me in that way. I hope that they do.
As of right now, the university has not made any moves to have the murals taken down. However, Barry's petition has 1,500 signatures.
That was WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas speaking about the Benton murals in Woodburn Hall at IU.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hello, Stacy.
Hi, Courtney. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
So on our show today, we want to talk about hands-on skills for caregivers. And you might be thinking, what in the heck are you talking about? Hands-on skills? So let's quickly go through some key hands-on skills for people actually giving care. So the first thing, I'll start with the first thing, and you can kind of move on from there, would be to approach the care recipient from the front. So don't come up behind someone. Approach them from the front, maintain eye contact, Use a calm voice. You may want to touch them lightly on the shoulder or the arm. That way they see you coming towards them. You're not going to startle them. And you can kind of, address the situation like, you know, hey, we're going to stand up now and we're going to go to the shower. That way they have an idea of what you're asking of them. And it's a good way to approach the situation.
That kind of flows directly into the elicit your loved one's help. So
okay.
No matter their level of skill or care that they need, they still deserve the respect to say, can you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And also, the more they do for themselves, the better off they're going to be. So if you're going to stand with someone, you tell them every step of the way, and you say, can you push up from the chair? Can you move your leg?
Mm-hmm. So that they have a choice.
They absolutely.
You know, like, yeah, I can do
right,
that.
Absolutely.
Easily.
If we do it for them because it's quicker, then mm-hmm. they're going to lose that ability. So it's super important to let them help themselves if they can. And a little of help from them means a lot less work for you. So
a third thing that you can do if you're providing hands-on skills as a caregiver is the care recipient, the person you're giving care to, go ahead and allow that person to finish what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're in the middle, or rather they're winding down a meal, let them finish the meal. You know, you want to avoid rushing someone in that situation, and you also want to avoid having them pick up on your anxiety. So you're a caregiver, you're in a hurry, you've got to run to work, and you're trying to wrap something up, but stop, take a minute, allow mm-hmm. some time for them to finish what their current action is, and then move along to the next thing. Sounds easy, but we all get busy. And in this kind of situation, we need to remember to slow down.
Utilize the major bone and muscle groups.
Interesting.
That one, I thought of it because I'd done some body mechanic training,
mm-hmm.
but only in that aspect. But pulling or supporting someone by their hands or arms it's difficult. It can hurt you. It can hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really the ideal way to do it. I mentioned earlier the pushing up from the chair. There's definitely ways to help them do the most that they can with their muscles that they have left. And take your time. I know we're, as Courtney just mentioned, we're stressed and it doesn't always, not always feasible, but it's really important to let them use those muscles. And it's also important for you to learn how to do lifting if you do need to. So figure out the body mechanics.
Yeah, and if you're a caregiver, you know, you don't want to injure yourself because then
right.
you are going to have two people in a situation. You're not able to give care to someone and you may end up, you know, pulling a muscle or straining, and then you're not able to provide that care.
Absolutely. And my favorite one is allow for their reality. And I remember years ago when I first started caregiving, I was working at a facility and they said that we had to orientate the person to the time and place mm-hmm. of now. And I just thought that was horrible that we had to do that. And now, of course, they don't do that. You go into their world.
You meet them where they're at. One of the tips that I really liked was if you're giving care to someone who has dementia or Alzheimer's, they don't recognize you. Depending on what the task is that you're trying to do, you can back off and give it some time.
Right.
If you're trying to wash their hair, the world isn't going to end.
Right.
Come back to this and
yes.
they may recognize you in a half hour or an hour. Now, if it's something that needs immediately addressed, you're going to have to go ahead and do that. If you need
right.
to change soiled clothing or bedding. A couple things, too, that I want to mention real quickly that are really helpful to know. If you get in a situation where you're providing care and someone maybe slides off a chair and you're unable to get them up, call the fire department. They can do
right.
what's called a fireman's assist.
Yes.
They'll come out and help you save your own back
yes.
and get the person safely back to
right.
where they need to be. And then 911 if there are injuries involved.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinay.
Don't mess around.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jada Lucas.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinay. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Erin Wegermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team for citizens journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes Store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News.